Hello, I'm Keith Pallon, and welcome to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. This weekend marks the 67th anniversary of Radio New Zealand International, so today we're putting the focus on that small station from the Pacific. The station signed on September 27th, 1948, by the then New Zealand Prime Minister, Peter Fraser.
This is Radio New Zealand, the shortwave division of the New Zealand Broadcasting Service, transmitting in the 25 and 19 meter bands from ZL3 on 11.78 megacycles and ZL4 on 15.28 megacycles. The time in New Zealand is just 1 minute past seven on the evening of Monday, the 27th of September, the day on which we celebrate New Zealand's Dominion Day. You are listening to the official opening program of Radio New Zealand from our studios in Wellington, the capital city.
Good evening to everybody listening in everywhere. On behalf of the government and people of New Zealand, I am proud to speak on this, the inaugural broadcast from Radio New Zealand. This is a very notable occasion as our shortwave division joins the field of international broadcasting, and I tender my congratulations to all concerned in the good work that has enabled a start to be made. Our service will be a modest one. It is not high-powered in comparison with the transmitters of some of the greater nations. Our time is limited. Still, we hope to make a contribution of value in extending mutual understanding of our people with those of other lands and knowledge of each other. As a member of the British Commonwealth of Nations, New Zealand shares in the common stock of high ideals and humanitarian outlook. Through the medium of Radio New Zealand, we hope to make our contribution towards the wider realization of the principles of democratic freedom. When the broadcast service was planned, we had in mind the many New Zealanders who have made their homes in other countries. We thought of the people of Western Samoa, the Cook Islands, and the Tokelau Islands, with whom we have special ties. Then there are the New Zealanders in Fiji and Tonga, as well as our friends in those islands. We also considered our friends in Australia. As members of the British Commonwealth and the South Pacific, as comrades in two world wars, and as fellow workers for peace and prosperity, Australians and New Zealanders have a distinctive bond of firm friendship, and I sincerely hope that this broadcasting service will do much to still further strengthen our enduring comradeship. Our purpose is to present an accurate picture of life in this country, and it is our hope that all who listen will find the news, information, and program interesting and entertaining. I am confident that Radio New Zealand will prove to be a worthy and acceptable addition to the shortwave services of the world, and I wish it every possible measure of success.
That was the New Zealand Prime Minister from 1948, Peter Fraser, inaugurating the international service Radio New Zealand International. Adrian Sainsbury is Radio New Zealand International's frequency manager, and he also does a little program hosting every now and again. We spoke to him over Skype about this interesting station from the Pacific.
Yes, we've grown up a lot in the last 20 years, I think you could say. It goes back to 1989-90 when the government of the day found some money to buy us a new transmitter. Up until then, we've been using some American 7.5 kilowatt transmitters, which were left here after World War II, to provide a very, what you could call, inadequate service to the Pacific Islands and to those DXs who had good sophisticated radios, could hear us a bit further ahead, further afield. So when we got our new 100 kilowatt transmitter back in 1990, I think we went to air in early 91, our whole aspect of life changed. We also had funding for quite a good news service, and so we were not so reliant then on relaying the domestic services, which had been the case in the past. And as the news service grew, we suddenly became aware, or very quickly we became aware, that the Pacific Islands were relaying our analog signal, but they also wanted Pacific news, not just about what might be happening in the world and Australia and New Zealand, but they wanted to hear what was happening in the island next door. And these small stations in Niue and Samoa and so on, they may be able to afford one journalist who can cover their local news, but there's nobody to actually collate the Pacific region as a whole and then broadcast it out so that those stations individually can then rebroadcast it on their local FM and AM stations. And that's where I think Radio New Zealand is unique, in that we don't actually intend to be here just to be a broadcaster of the region, which is very nice for those people who've got shortwave radios, but we also want to be a part of the Pacific radio stations themselves. So we go into them on their own frequency. And this, I think, has been quite a successful way because we're the only people that do that sort of thing.
What's rather amazing is your coverage. And if I look at the size of Radio New Zealand, I mean, if I compare it, let's say, to other broadcasters, I mean, where do you fit? Because you have the large broadcasters like the BBC World Service, Deutsche Welle, Voice of America, Voice of Russia. Then you have the small to medium size. Where do you fit into that? Are you like microscopic?
I think so. But with a staff of, I think, all up probably 20.
20?
Yes. I think we could qualify to be the smallest international broadcaster in the world.
Wow, that's just incredible. I mean, does that also include? I suppose you also hire freelancers and people part time as well to come in and do programs. You don't just have the 20 people to do all the hours that you do, right?
Correct. That's absolutely right. We're basically broadcasting about 10 hours a day, but not spread throughout the 24-hour period, right? Mm-hmm. And so that then gives us a reasonable spread of things. And in between, we relay the domestic service to help the load a bit.
Right.
And most of our programming, which we generate ourselves, is news and current affairs about the Pacific and for the Pacific.
And do you also broadcast in languages that are indigenous to that area?
Yes, indeed. Every day we broadcast in... news bulletins go out in Samoan for the people there, and we also do various other languages around the Pacific, including even the French.
Mm-hmm. Now, New Zealand is in a unique position because you are literally, if you said the bottom of the world, you are at the bottom of the world. You're pretty much like Australians have felt for many years, cut off from the rest of the world because you are so far. What are some of the technical challenges that you have broadcasting on shortwave from New Zealand?
Oh, they're enormous, Keith. Where do I begin? I think first up, you're so right. It's a very big piece of the globe that we're trying to cover from here. It's our main coverage area, basically looking north from New Zealand. To our right, we look across to the Cook Islands, Samoa, and that area, and Tahiti. And then straight north of us, we've got Fiji. And then over to our left, towards Australia, we've also got Vanuatu, the Solomon Islands, and New Caledonia. So that's our spread. And, of course, there's a time difference across that period, that space as well, of up to 4 hours. So we have to time shift and all that sort of thing to help talk to the different areas. But it is a challenge when you're doing it basically with only one transmitter.
You only have one transmitter?
Yes, we have one analog transmitter and one transmitting in DRM. So, in effect, we are covering the whole of the Pacific with one transmitter. Now, if you were to compare us, say, with Australia, who in worldwide context are also quite a small broadcaster, they are quite enormous compared to us. They would, for example, have at least three frequencies available broadcasting to the Pacific Islands or that area. And we're doing it on one frequency. Now, that in itself has challenges because to anybody who's an experienced broadcaster in short wave will know that one frequency doesn't always fit all. And so we have to juggle our frequencies quite a bit during the day to try and give the coverage that we need to give.
You know, just before we recorded the interview, we were talking about cyclones. I mean, how do you protect yourself? I mean, do you have a backup if the transmitter site was to be damaged?
We're okay down here in New Zealand. We're out of the cyclone zone. The cyclone area is basically closer to the equator, and we're far enough south not to be affected by cyclones. We might get sideswipe occasionally, but never anything very serious. I think the most we have to worry about at our transmission base is high winds at times, which is something that New Zealand has to suffer with anyway, because we're in the roaring 40s.
Mm-hmm. And during Radio New Zealand's history, has Radio New Zealand ever exchanged airtime with other broadcasters, let's say, to reach Europe or Africa or North America, or is everything literally done from New Zealand?
We do work in cooperation with a few broadcasters. More recently, in the last few years, we've got time on Radio Australia. They take a 30-minute or 20-minute current affairs program, Dateline Pacific, from us every day, and that's broadcast over the Radio Australia frequencies. The BBC Pacific Service is also taking that same program every day as well, which is quite an honour for a small broadcaster like us to be considered in that league, that they're prepared to take our current affairs programs and broadcast it on their own networks.
You were saying that a lot of the stations in the Pacific, on the Pacific Islands, were taking programs from Radio New Zealand off just standard analog radio and rebroadcasting them. But you've now entered the DRM stage.
That's correct, yes. So that's been my greatest challenge, I think.
And why not satellite?
Well, money. As simple as that. The government fund us to broadcast to the Pacific Islands, but unfortunately they don't fund us sufficiently to be able to do it with using satellite technology.
Now, you know, as you know as well as I do, I mean, for the past maybe 20 years, since the collapse of socialism in Eastern Europe, it's all been doom and gloom for shortwave radio. But it seems that shortwave now is going through a transition period, because shortwave is still widely used, for example, in Africa and in Eastern Europe, Latin America. There's many countries in Asia, for example, in Indonesia, they use shortwave for even domestic broadcasting. What about in the Pacific?
Oh, that's the same here too, without a doubt. You can go to any Pacific island here in this area, and you'll find most homes will have a shortwave radio. There are also domestic shortwave broadcasters in the Pacific area. Vanuatu is one, broadcasting out of Port Vila on 3945 at night. You'll find Vanuatu, and also the Solomon Islands on 5020, and they're there purely to broadcast to their outer islands, because that's the only economical way they can do it. The big change for the Pacific Islands, in a way, for us, is to be able to give them a high-quality DRM feed, which you mentioned just a moment ago about the new technologies. And that's providing a challenge, in as much as it's such a new technology, there wasn't anybody to go and ask about it. We knew what you had to do. You had this transmitter that broadcasts a digital signal, and you have to get a receiver to decode it and listen to it. Well, that sounds all very straightforward, but when we actually got to the practical aspect of using it, we discovered, for a start, there was a very limited range of DRM capable receivers on the market. That was the case 4 years ago, and I'm afraid to say it hasn't much improved today. So that proved a great difficulty, so we actually had to go and find some receivers. We bought them. The ones we bought, unfortunately, are no longer available. They were the Digital World Traveller, which were made in Germany. Mm-hmm. They're an excellent receiver, but unfortunately, the Dolby bought the company and decided not to make them anymore, which is rather a shame. But anyway, we bought quite a few of them, and we've installed them at our partner radio stations in the Pacific Islands, and they're using those in conjunction with a small notebook computer to decode our incoming signal and to rebroadcast our program on their local transmitter.
And when they rebroadcast the signal on their local FM transmitter, what is the audio quality like? I mean, is it literally studio quality or FM quality?
Oh yes, definitely, without a doubt. There's absolutely no noise, and the disadvantage, you could say, of DRM is that, of course, if the signal fades, mm-hmm. It's like a cell phone. You're either in range or you're out of range. And so It's not like the ordinary conventional shortwave where the signal might get a bit weak, but you can still hear it through the noise. With DRM, there is no noise, and the signal is either there or it's not there.
Now, when you're using DRM to feed these stations, do you also have regular listeners who might just have DRM capability writing in and saying, oh, I live in so-and-so and I picked up your signal?
No. the nearest listeners I know of who've got DRM receivers are on the eastern coast of Australia in places like Brisbane.
Uh-huh.
And they're, of course, usually radio hams.
Right. So it's really your DRM service is really just for the partner stations.
That's correct. What I've had to do to try and measure what I'm doing and to be assured that what's working, in other words, the frequency we're using is delivering a good enough signal into Samoa, for example, I've steadily over the last few years stationed independent receivers in various islands with high quality DRM radios and hook them onto the internet so that I can access them directly from here. So at my desk at the moment, I can look at American Samoa on one side,
mm-hmm.
and right across to Cairns in Northern Australia, and I've got another station in Port Vila in Vanuatu, and in Fiji right in the middle. So I can have up on the screen three or four receivers, and I can see the same one transmitted DRM signal, and I can actually see the exact quality that they're getting in each place.
So in other words, there's really no reason to send in reception reports because you have it at your fingertips.
Absolutely, yes. It's rather, in a way, it does the shortwave listener out of a job.
Now, with your broadcasting to that area, you know, when people would think of Radio New Zealand International, they would not think of a hard-hitting news organization or for current affairs. But you can, when necessary, provide serious news coverage to that area, correct?
Oh yes, yeah. I would say our current affairs people are no different to what you would hear on the BBC or Radio Australia.
Now, how would you say describe the sound of Radio New Zealand? When you sent me some archive clips, and I was listening to one of them from the launch date in the 1940s, and when I was listening to it, it sounded like he was very stuffy. He must have been wearing a tuxedo in the studio. It didn't have the, you know, the laid back feeling that you'd probably get from New Zealand. Now, I suppose that sound has changed. I mean, today you have a very different sound than you did many years ago, and definitely a more laid back sound than the BBC. Now, did this happen just over time, as it did with many broadcasters, or was this a decision that had to be made? Like, we're New Zealand, we should sound a little bit more laid back.
That's a good point you make there, Keith. No, I think it's for just the way life has changed. Back in the 40s, New Zealand was considered really a dominion of Great Britain.
Mm-hmm.
They'd come out of World War II. The countries were extremely close. New Zealand talked about the mother country all the time. The broadcasting service here was an absolute copy of the BBC as it was in those days. And I think, like the style of any broadcaster you listen to today, it's much more informal than it used to be. And people are not chosen for their voice quality quite so much. In other words, their accent, they're not so fussy anymore. You can portray the country as it really is. And I think that's a very healthy and good sign. It's the real world. And New Zealand, I think, reflects itself in that way too. Our broadcasting type here is, I would say, definitely informal. And I think somebody described it to me as youthful. And I think that's probably quite a good way to describe it.
A lot of people have a lot of misconceptions about New Zealand. They think, you know, if you mention New Zealand to, let's say, a lot of people in North America, they'll say, oh yeah, the land of sheep or something like that, you know. But of course, that is nothing, that's only one little, tiny little aspect of New Zealand, despite the fact that there are many millions of sheep. But, you know, New Zealand is a modern country like countries everywhere else in the world. And of course, technology has changed, radio technology has changed. And we've seen declining shortwave audiences in North America and Western Europe. What about New Zealand?
New Zealand, within New Zealand, has never used shortwave at all. In fact, Yeah, that was. I've spent most of my life here, but I was originally born in England, and I came out here when I was in my early 20s, and I was quite surprised because I'd grown up in parts of Africa, and I'd also, and of course, I was accustomed to shortwave, and I was really surprised. I came to a country that didn't use shortwave and had no need to. It had a very well developed medium wave service around the country, and in more recent years, of course, has been FM as well, VHF coverage of the country. So shortwave was never a thing. The only place in broadcasting here that we used shortwave was in the 70s, early 70s, particularly where before satellites were really going. We used shortwave to relay BBC news bulletins here, and that was as a news source. And that all changed, of course, with the advent of satellite distribution around the world. But yes, that's about. But you're right. From a technological point of view, New Zealand is not third world by any stretch of the imagination, and is. But still, it's a very large farm, despite all that. And agriculture will always be a very, very important part of this country's way of earning its living in the world.
So, I mean, like the kind of shortwave listening, let's say you'd find in other places, like people tuning into Deutsche Welle or BBC, that was not that common in New Zealand?
Oh, yes. Expats here would have their shortwave radios to listen to Deutsche Welle and so on. That certainly happens. And, of course, nowadays, of course, with syndicated, you know, Sky TV everywhere, people get to watch Deutsche Welle and foreign channels on those services.
What are some of the future plans for Radio New Zealand? Because we've heard about some budget cuts that will be made, that want to be made in domestic broadcasting. Will this have an impact on the international service?
I think it's too early to say. We actually haven't had a cut to our income, but what has happened is it's been frozen, which in time will become a cut, of course. Mm-hmm. And so it rather depends how long that lasts. We're obviously going to have to make contingency plans for some economies if we have to make them, but it's too early at this stage to be able to say that's going to happen or when it's going to happen.
Radio New Zealand, I mean, you're located in Wellington. Do people in Wellington know about the international service, or is it like in most countries where if you mention, let's say, Radio Netherlands or Voice of America, people go, what's that?
Yes, you're pretty right there. We've got a higher profile than we used to have, thanks to the domestic service taking some of our news bulletins during the day, which has been a great help. Mm-hmm. Because it was a sad reflection of domestic broadcasting for many years that they didn't actually broadcast very much about what was happening in the Pacific, even though we were doing it for our international audience. It wasn't being heard by the domestic audience. Yet they would be covering things that were happening in Europe, which were probably not quite as relative to what we really ought to know. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's changed, and that's a good thing, and that has raised our profile. But I think you're dead right. I think in most modern countries these days, the ordinary person in the street is pretty well unaware of international broadcasting.
You know, in many ways, you can say that Radio New Zealand International is really the voice of people that probably would not never have a voice.
Yes, that's a very good way of putting it. I travel the Pacific Islands a lot as part of my job, and everywhere I go, people say, "Hey, it's great that you're there. Not only do you tell us what's happening in our own country at times, because some of our governments here, you know, the individual small Pacific Island governments are not very proactive at publicising things that are going wrong in their own area. Yet we can broadcast back into the country, and it's quite all right for us to say it, but it wouldn't be right for the local newspaper possibly to publish it always." Mm-hmm. But once we've said it, the local paper will publish it and say, "Ah, but we didn't say it. We heard that on Radio New Zealand." So it's an interesting way, and people say this is great because it helps democracy in the region. Of course, we've got our work cut out for us at the moment with Fiji, where the censorship is very strong. But there is another good example where shortwave doesn't know any political boundaries. And so it doesn't matter how austere a government may be, it's very difficult to stop your people from within the country from hearing what's going on outside.
That was Adrian Sainsbury, the frequency manager and somewhat of a program host at Radio New Zealand International. This is Media Notebook Plus coming to you from PCJ Radio International. And we now take a look at what's been happening in propagation and what we can expect over the next 7 days. Here's Glenn Hauser. Glenn?
Keith from IPS in Australia, the global HF propagation forecast through September 26th. Fair at low and middle latitudes, normal to poor at high latitudes. Moderately degraded HF conditions expected to continue over the next few days due to low levels of ionizing solar radiation and occasional geomagnetic activity. From Space Weather South Africa, magnetic conditions quiet to unsettled, becoming active September 26th. Shortwave fadeouts unlikely, MUF unstable. From Met Office UK, the four-day space weather forecast summary through September 27th. Solar activity likely to be low with a 30% chance of moderate class flares. A chance of minor geomagnetic storms on September 25th and 26th, then the risk declines. From FK Yanda OK1HH of the Czech Propagation Interest Group, the geomagnetic field will be quiet to unsettled September 25th, October 2nd, 7th, and 13th. Mostly quiet September 26th, 29th, October 10th, and 14th. Quiet on September 27th and 28th. Quiet to active September 30th, October 1st, 3rd, 6th, 9th, and 11th. Active to disturbed on October 4th, 5th, 8th, and 12th. The outlook from SWPC in Boulder. Geomagnetic field at unsettled to active levels expected September 25th and 26th. Quiet to unsettled conditions September 27th to 30th. Unsettled to active October 1st to 9th, with minor storm levels likely October 1st, 5th, and 6th, and major storm levels likely October 4th and 8th. Quiet to unsettled October 10th to 16th. Unsettled to active with a chance for minor storm periods October 17th. ANK indices peaking at 20 and 5 October 1st, 45 and 6 on October 4th, 50 and 6 on October 8th. Lowest indices of 8 and 3, not 5 and 2, on these dates only, September 27th to 30th. Solar flux between 95 and 100 from September 25th to October 7th, maybe up to 105 October 8th to 11th, and down to 90 by October 16th. Bill Hepburn's VHF-UHF-DX maps show extreme tropospheric ducting along the Southern California coast, increasing along Baja California all week. For a change, not extreme over the Mediterranean, but still extreme all around the Arabian Peninsula.
All right, thanks a lot, Glenn, and that's all we have time for this week. For the next two editions of the program, for the 3rd and 10th of October, we have a couple of special programs, and then we will return to normal on October the 17th. If you wish to contact us, of course, you know our email address, mnp@pcjmedia.com. On behalf of Glenn Hauser and the whole team, I'm Keith Powell, wishing you all saying 73 and 88 to the ladies.